from ComedyFilmNerds.com with Graham Elwood.
The floating force of Pandora, ever heard of it?
And Chris Mancini.
What clan are you from?
This is the Comedy Film Nerds Podcast.
It's not that great.
This is not the ninja movie I signed up for.
Cousin Eddie's package.
Why can't this happen?
I got nothing going on.
Hey, I'm Graham Elwood.
I'm Chris Mancini. Special episode.
Special episode. What you're about to hear is several interviews that were recorded at the Albuquerque Film Festival at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in beautiful Albuquerque, New Mexico.
And they're great interviews, too. We've got Mark Fergus, the writer of the new Cowboys and Aliens that's coming out, and he wrote the first Iron Man.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great interview about what the screenwriting process and dealing with the Hollywood machine is all about. And also the guys from an indie film called Pickin' and Grinnin'. And there's another great interview with Earl Brown as a character actor who you're going to recognize a lot of his work. And then a couple indie filmmakers, short filmmakers, mm-hmm. and hear what their process is all about. So this is a really special episode. It's our first ever live podcast at a festival.
One of many.
We're going to hopefully make this a new thing here at CFN World Headquarters.
Yes, getting out of the garage.
Putting on your overcoat, packing a grip, and getting out on the big jet plane. First of many. We hope you enjoy it. And again, tell your friends. And every time you go to the store and buy something, you're supporting independent filmmaking, like poor filmmakers that have to go to casinos.
Yes, and lose all their money.
And lose all their money. Table. Well, we're telling them, get out there in the craps table and win yourself a budget.
Yes. Every line item you got
to
get.
Get out there. Get those dice a hot, kid. Maybe you get yourself enough money for a feature film.
Yes, and with the contingency.
With the contingency. All right, so here it is, live from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Are you going to play the theme song?
No.
We will. You want us to play...
Welcome to the Comedy Film Nerds Podcast for the Albuquerque Film Festival. How's everybody doing here tonight at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino? Let's get crazy. Outstanding. And to all of our listeners in North America and abroad, my name is Graham Elwood.
I'm Chris Mancini. Thanks for listening. It's our first live podcast.
Yes, usually we do this in Chris's garage in the San Fernando Valley, so we also share it with a porn space. So it's very nice.
It's a big garage.
So this is a big venue. We're very excited to be here. And what we're going to be doing, we're just going to be interviewing filmmakers, everyone who's involved at the Albuquerque Film Festival.
Until they see the first one.
Boy, I hate to have your job.
So let's get it started. The man blowing harp. Gentlemen, introduce yourselves, your group, your film. Let everybody listening at home and here know who you are.
Somebody speak.
Hi, Graham.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Johnny Dowers. This is Garrett Matheny. He's awesome.
On a podcast, Johnny, they can't actually see us.
Good for them.
That's a good thing for me.
Well, because these guys are both wearing leotards.
Good evening.
All right, so guys, tell us about your movie, Pickin' and Grinnin', which is playing here at the festival.
Go ahead.
Great interview. This is rock solid stuff.
You're off to a good start.
Now, you guys have two screenings, and how did this movie come about, the Pickin' and the Grinnin'? Did you start with Pickin' and add Grinnin'?
Pickin' started. Pickin', we're grinning now.
Uh-huh.
Hopefully,
nice.
We fill up the stadium tonight, because we're in a 99-seat stadium.
It's an equity waiver movie.
That's where Queensryche is playing.
Yes.
In fact, we're just warming the place up for them. We're testing their monitors and everything.
Outstanding. So tell us about the movie. You directed it, John?
Yeah, I sure did.
Okay, so tell the audience here and listening what the movie is exactly.
Well, the movie is a movie, and it's about two guys and their cousin who are relatively inept because their family heritage is of ineptitude, and therefore they want to try and break the mold, and so ultimately they try and get to Nashville to play in a music competition, and lo and behold, they pick up a host of characters along the way, and they get into the competition, and I'm not going to tell you what happens, but it's not really about the pot of gold, ladies
and gentlemen. We lose.
Spoiler alert.
It has nothing to do
with the pot of gold.
Now, I know I was talking to the other John before you guys started playing about the movies from the 70s that inspired this film. Tell our audience a little bit about some of those movies.
Sweet, Sweet Back, Badass Song.
And Death Race 2000, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Big, big Hollywood blockbuster movies like Ishtar and The Fabulous Beggar Boy.
Actually, in the Winnebago, in the middle of nowhere, when the winds were high, it felt like Death Race 2000.
We like Tulane Blacktop. That's not so bad. It's been shown here
yes.
at the festival.
Tulane Blacktop was at
the festival. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I told Monty Hellman that a lot of the road inspired me when we were shooting this film. He was nonplussed, but he was like he was looking at me like, dude, that's a hard job. Well, and I totally read his mind. I knew exactly what he was thinking.
Also, we saw the shooting, and we play brothers, and John threatened to shoot me during the filming, so we had a lot of
I did. I almost killed him.
Now, how did this movie come about? Did it start with the music, and you kind of wrote a story around it, or did you guys kind of want to write a story about musicians?
I'll start this one. So, basically, Garrett and I have a comedy band, called the Johnsons, and with a friend of ours, David Lane, and we basically were trying to, we were writing a TV treatment for these guys on a Winnebago, trying to make it in Hollywood. Every episode started with a song, and then the damn Flight of the Conchords came out, and then we were trying to adapt it into a screenplay, and then Garrett introduced me to a movie called Jackpot, which I love, which John Grise and Garrett Morris are in. It's a fabulous Polish Brothers movie.
About six people saw it.
That hit John's family and me, and then we were trying to, with that kind of hit it, we were like, wow, John plays this karaoke guy who thinks he's going to hit it big, and Garrett Morris plays his manager and wants 10% of a blender when they win it. And we were like, that's it, that kind of thing. So we started writing a movie, and I'm just not Hollywood enough that then, believe it or not, the day after I watched Jackpot and we talked about it, I ran into John at what used to be Freedom Guitars on Sunset Boulevard and said, hey, dude, Jackpot's my favorite movie. Here's my script. And cue John.
Well, he didn't say, here's my script. He said, I'm writing a script, and I'll get it to you. But give me your email address. And about a year later, he sent me 40 pages.
We don't want a revisionist history here. We want to tell the real deal.
And I was like, shoo, fly.
I'm from Louisiana, and I just learned to write 10 years ago. I mean, like, write words. So, sorry.
And then the next thing you know, old Jed's a millionaire. I mean, and then, I don't know.
And then you bought the 1976 Winnebago on eBay for $1,600.
Yes. Wow.
After Dan Reilly came to me and said, hey, we made a little short video, like truly like a 2-4 minute video, something. And Dan Reilly, sitting over there, producer.
Dano.
He saw that little video and said, I want to make this movie. And sat down with me. I'd never met him before. And he looked me in the eye. And he shook my hand and he said, I want to make this movie. He goes, I don't know if I'm going to get you $20,000 or $60,000. We're going to make this movie. And I said, I believe you're serious. So I went home and I bid on Winnebago. And I called him the next day and I said, Dan, I hope you're serious because I bought Gomer. Yeah.
That's the name of the Winnebago is Gomer?
Gomer, yeah. And to John's benefit, I mean, we literally had people that wanted to put money in, but they loved the idea of the movie but didn't like us. And all that kind of, we had money come and
same
go.
Same thing happened with Flight of the Conchords.
All you guys are filmmakers. We had money come and go. And John stuck to it and said it needs to be these nobody guys. They're the guys. And
they wanted me to get so like Christian Slater and John Cusack. And they're great guys. But, you know,
So when did you guys actually write the other 60 pages?
Well, we kind of all, these guys wrote stuff, and then I would write stuff and throw it at them. As a director, you know, you want to change things and form it a certain way and make sure that it kind of stays on a certain course. And it just kind of felt like it was in a mimeograph machine. It just kept going in circles.
Did you guys ever have a development fight?
No. Did you ever watch High Line, Chris?
Yes, all the time. Chris and I go to High Line.
Would it be weird if I said yes?
We would throw the script to John, and he would kind of catch it in one motion and throw it back at us and say, fix it.
Yeah, here's how fighting goes with John Grise. You go, hey, we'd like to do this, and John goes, change it to this.
And you go, so, thank you.
Yeah.
Does that make me a control freak?
That went over like a turd in church.
Someone listening to this at home is laughing. So let me ask you this, John. Now, our audience listening might not know some of the work that you've done. You've been in a million. Tell our audience to get familiar with some of the things you've done. I know you were in Napoleon Dynamite.
I'm not going to fucking do that.
I will. I love this part. John Grise is 7 years old, opposite Charlton Heston and Will Penny.
Nice.
That is correct. His father, Tom Grise, created the Rat Patrol, directed The Glass House, directed many other great films. John was Laszlo Hollyfeld on Real Genius.
Wow.
Real Genius, if you guys love that.
Oh, shit.
He was the van driver on Men in Black.
That's when Val Kilmer was thin.
Yeah, he was on...
That's when he didn't look like Chill Wills.
He had a very memorable Seinfeld character.
Wrap it up.
He was...
Oh, come on, man. Like, stop.
Uncle Rico and Napoleon Dynamite and Roger Linus on Lost.
He was Roger...
Impressive memory, actually.
Well, guys, thank you so much.
One more question.
No.
Go
ahead.
He's taking over like me.
Especially the one fan we have in Japan.
Yes.
We have a big fan in Japan.
She's huge.
Not
a big person. She's a big fan.
If people that are
at
the Albuquerque Film Festival, how can they see this movie? Will it be coming out on DVD?
Well, our trailer, I think, pretty much covers the entire film. So just watch the trailer.
You don't have to go to the movie.
Where can people find information about your film?
So it's like the town.
Yes. Well, we're playing at the Guild tonight. Is this podcast...
When we say live,
well, if you guys want to catch a plane and get here.
So where can people find out online about your film?
That is a great question. Facebook. Pickett and Grinnin Movie.
.com?
Oh, wait. Jason Kizvardi, where are you?
Okay.
We have a website.
You do have a website.
You think I would know this stuff.
Our production designer actually designed a website, too. Jason, where is the website? Is it up yet?
Wow, no wonder your producer has an annoyed look on his face right now.
It's up? What's it called?
Pickin'
and Grinnin' Movie.
You could remember his resume and you couldn't remember that.
Welcome to work.
I don't go on Facebook. I don't do any of that.
Also, for a price, we'll come and read the whole movie to you at your home.
Nice.
So pickinandgrinnandmovie.com, and also they're going to be at the LA International Film Festival in October. The screenings, the screening dates will be released, so check back to pickinandgrinnandmovie.com.
We already won that one, didn't we?
Yeah, that festival announces the winners and then they screen them.
Yes.
We also won best score.
Nice.
And we did that.
Congratulations.
All of us.
We scored it on tape.
But on tape,
nothing digital, no SIMD, no time code, tape.
A couple quick things that we're really proud of.
One and a two and a, that's enough.
We shot the entire film in the United States. It was all found money from friends and family, and okay. We literally had some friends put in their life savings once they saw footage and started believing in it. And
that's no pressure.
No CGI. Everything you see.
Well, we little baby had driving. Kenny Loggins is CGI. We have Kenny Loggins in the movie. But I just want to say something really quick. They're having a seminar downstairs on financing a film, and I'm just going to give a quick, the Clip Notes version of it. All you have to do is open the phone book and look under dentist and just pull that page out and then just call all those numbers and you might find some money.
You will have to put his daughter in the film, but he will finance it.
All right, guys, thank you so much.
Guys.
And we heard congratulations on winning at the Flagstaff Film Festival. You guys won the grand jury prize there. A round of applause for everybody for Pickin' and Grinnin', you guys.
Albuquerque Film Festival.
Thank you so much. Pickin' and Grinnin' the movie.com. Check out their website. All right, our next guest, actually, I always say our first guest when we do the podcast. Normally, we only have one guest, and Chris always makes fun of me. So this time it's accurate.
Next guest.
So our next guest was a writer of first Iron Man film.
Just the first one, right?
That's right.
All right, the good one. Yeah, he wrote the good one. The first Iron Man.
What we were talking about was Clive Owen.
Oh, yeah. City of Men.
City of Men?
Children of Men.
Children of Men. Way to go. We run a film podcast. We know what we're doing.
There was a city in it.
There was a city. So here he is. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mark Fergus, everybody. Come on.
Thank you.
Now, let's ask you about your most recent thing. It's Cowboys and Aliens, right?
Yeah, we adapted that and wrote, there's some other writers on that as well, but that just I think it's wrapped now, but it was shooting in Santa Fe for most of the summer.
Is it Cowboys versus Aliens or Cowboys and Aliens?
You know, I really struggled to come up with an incredible title that would. I thought that was the temporary title, but that's what the graphic novel is called, and everybody loves it. So I'm the only one who had an issue with it.
What were your other titles that you?
I never came up with one. I was told never will we change this. This is awesome. This is perfect. It tells.
Well, that would be a good title too.
Yeah. I went back to Crimson in the Snow, which is the title you use as a placeholder while you're figuring out what.
Like an Alan Smithy film.
Exactly. Yeah. But it really does. Capture what the story is about, and my only issue with it is it puts you in a certain tone that you don't necessarily want to be. I think this thing is awesome because it's a great, you know, you want to have it feel like a Clint Western, and then weird stuff starts happening, but you don't want to start off with cowboys and aliens.
What's the premise for those of the people that aren't familiar with the graphic novel?
It's exactly what the title says, cowboys and then aliens, which is again why I'm irritated by the title, but it's go back to the Stagecoach Magnificent Seven, Searchers, kind of really amazing westerns, without winking at it, just play it like for what a western is so great at, and then, you know, kind of like Close Encounters, where strange things start to creep in along the edges, and then by the end, it's cowboys versus aliens. But
can you guarantee right now that it'll be better than Jonah Hex?
Holy, well, I think, yes, I can. I can guarantee pretty much anything will be better. But anyway, no, that was, in defense of Jonah Hex, there was...
You should just stop right there.
No, well, that's the way.
Nice. Perfect. That's our buzzer for bad movies.
Yes.
That's America's Got Talent. It was when I was watching it, I felt like I was watching two movies that had been sutured together. And then I read that that's exactly what happened. You almost have to blame that process rather than, I mean, Josh Brolin is awesome. He probably signed on to do a badass character that was not going, you know, they weren't going to try to put a political subplot on and a B story that every time I watched, I was like, what does this have to do with? And I was stunned to realize that that was the exact nature of that movie. So I think it could have been something. So the process might have hurt that one more than most movies.
Have you ever, explain to our audience what that process is, because some people don't, they see a screenwriter's name in the credits and they don't understand that sometimes a studio hires all these punch-up people, and have you ever personally had to deal with that with the script that you've written?
Yeah, everyone, pretty much. And,
right.
And sometimes you're replacing other people, sometimes they're replacing you, but you always...
It's not always credited.
Yeah, a lot of times not credited, and a lot of times, you know, ultimately... The process is pretty fair. The people who get credit, or you know, the guild is pretty rigorous, and it's writers who do the credits arbitration. So it usually turns out to be a lot of times the people who get it are the ones who should have gotten it. But you almost can't write a script alone anymore. You have to get through five or six people to come in, do the dialogue, this guy does male characters better. So you get five guys coming in. And
how many scriptwriters do you think were on The Killers?
The Killers.
That's the Ashton Kutcher, Catherine Heigl movie.
I know the A-team, they said 15. I don't know.
15 on the A-team?
Only three with credit, but essentially that's a lot of times now when a movie is in desperate trouble. They just keep throwing writers at it.
Yeah, because the more writers means a much better script. Yeah. Once you get to 15, clearly you have a gem.
And you go back and, you know, you read the script they bought, you know, at the beginning, and it kicks ass. It's great. And you wonder, why didn't they just
shoot the movie that they bought?
Well, speaking of a script that kicks ass and a movie that kicks ass is Children of Men. Like, that movie I thought was, it was amazing. And I thought Clive Owen and everything. Tell us about...
It was an amazing movie that just made you want to kill yourself.
Yeah, it's really...
Mission accomplished.
It's
see First Snow tonight. It's another one that attempts that.
So tell our audience what, you know, that specific script, your involvement from the beginning, and your opinion of the final product and everything.
Yeah, I mean, that was a really good experience because we got that job very early in our career. Nobody particularly wanted to tackle that book. It wasn't high on anybody's list to, it was a beautiful story, but we went in and pitched it as a retelling of Casablanca, basically, and that's how we got the job. And we told it in that vein where, you know, the person who destroyed your heart, you know, back in your past now comes to you and says, I need you for something more important than either of us. And that wasn't in the book. And that's sort of how we unlocked it. And then we got a great director who immediately replaced us with his own writer, which is what happens. He's comfortable working with a writer that he has worked with before. And it just went on to get made. It was sort of impossible that it even got made, but he I guess he had the Harry Potter movie made $400 gazillion, and he was able to do right. This movie he wanted. So a lot of things could have stopped that movie from happening, but you know, if nothing good ever happens to me in this business, I gotta say that was one of those things that you have to say, this is about as good as it gets, right. Where it goes and becomes a fantastic movie, and it could have died on the vine just about anywhere along the process. So I can't really complain when, like, oh, it's the life of a writer is so hard. I mean, I cashed in that card with Children of Men, so.
Are you working on anything now that's in development that hasn't been announced?
No, we're working on, you're always working on 10 things trying to get one job.
Of course, yeah.
So we're working on another adaptation of for Catherine Hardwicke called Maximum Ride, which is a book that I don't really, it's not aimed at me, it's more of a you know, for younger people, but it's an amazing story with amazing ideas that needs someone to come in and like give it a structure and give it, you know, kind of cut it down to size to make it a movie, and we're pretty good at that, so they are giving us a shot at that, and you know, you don't always necessarily have to be the target audience for something, like, you know,
right.
We're not comic aficionados particularly, but when we saw the Iron Man gig, you're like, oh, I know what this needs. This needs a screwed up middle-aged guy struggling with shit, and I can...
So just more, it needed Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah,
it's exactly right. What
but even, you know, even then, like, people were, I remember people sort of snickering about, you know, him playing a superhero, whether Iron Man was, you know, it was kind of on the C list, or people kind of grinned when you said you were working on Iron Man, like, oh, great, I can't wait. And, so
it's like saying I'm working on a Power Man or Iron Fist movie.
Yeah, yeah. And so our thing was, all right, let's show them. Let's really pull out all the stops and surprise everybody. So that was the energy of the first one, which was everybody felt like this could be the last job they would ever have. We all thought this is it. No one's going to hire, including Robert. Everybody was pretty aghast at how scary it was to make this movie and not know if it was ridiculous. You know,
right.
So when it clicked with people, we were pretty excited and kind of surprised, very surprised.
Well, we have a lot of filmmakers here, and also we have a lot of filmmakers who listen, and I think they'd love to know, how did you get your first job?
First job was...
Casting couch.
Yeah. Hey. The writing couch is bigger.
Yeah, it's really sad.
It's more of a writing tent.
Yeah.
We just wrote a bunch of specs. Never sold a single one, but we're able to get an interview.
You have a writing partner?
Yes, Hawk Osby, who lives in Vermont, and we have a good long-term working relationship because we're, you know, thousands of miles apart. So we, you know, we don't get into the fist fights, except on Iron Man. We had to sit in a room together, and it was scary. Like, you know, it's tense, but. And we got an interview with Jersey Films, Danny DeVito's company. I don't know if they're around anymore, but it was for a Scanner Darkly, a Philip K. Dick novel that, again, nobody wanted to really, no one knew what to do with it, so they're like, oh, give it to the new guys. And that's how we started.
Part of the animated one?
No, that ended up, Richard Linklater did his own version years later. This was a different director, different studio.
Okay.
So we did a thriller version that was kind of like The French Connection, which I still think would have been pretty badass, but, you know, whatever, it didn't happen. But we didn't screw that job up, and I led the Children of Men, and you just try to get the next job. That's how, but that first one, you got to have like three or four decent scripts. They say, oh, these guys can write, let's give them... the thing that nobody else wants. And that's a good niche you can carve out for yourself, the stuff nobody else wants. so not dissing it at all.
Right on. Well, any other questions, Chris? Mm-hmm. All right, well, thank you so much. Thank Mark you. Fergus, everybody. Big round of applause. Thanks for coming out, man. All right, folks, our next guest was in the movie Something About Mary, Deadwood, and Being John Malkovich. Big round of applause for Earl Brown, everybody. Come on.
How great was it to curse all the time in Deadwood?
Well, it was in poetry, so I felt like, you know, it's artistic vulgarity. But it was fucking awesome, you guys.
What was your favorite part about working on that show?
On Deadwood?
Yeah.
That it was this creative environment that you couldn't wait to get there of a morning. Franklin Ajay said it best. He joined second season. He said, I've been doing this for 30 years. It's the first show I've ever been on that when people sign out, they stick around.
Right.
Because it was that. You know, I worked on the writing staff also. So David Milch is the genius. Milch is the guy.
Right.
And you never knew. We didn't have scripts. He would write today what we're going to shoot tomorrow. We would all write, but then David would rewrite us. So you didn't know until you got there, you know, what was going to happen. So that.
Tell our audience who you were, what you did on Deadwood.
On Deadwood, I played Dan Doherty. I was Swearingen's right-hand guy. I had the highest body count. I may not have had the most... I think he had the most fucks and cocksuckers, but I had the most dead bodies.
Well, that's what you want. You want the most body count. That's yeah. That's what you want in your resume. How are you involved in the Albuquerque Film Festival?
I'm in Pickett and Grinning.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It came about... I was sitting at my Starbucks in Toluca Lake, Burbank.
Nice.
Your Starbucks?
I was.
That's and, over there by the Bob's Big Boy.
But I have a bloodhound, a full-grown female bloodhound that goes with me. So Johnny Dowers comes by. He goes, hey, man, I like your dog. And I said, you sound like you're part of my tribe. He goes, yeah, man. So he sits down and we chat. We're talking Louisiana, Kentucky, this, that, and the other. And about 30 minutes in, he goes, man, I got this script I'd like you to read. I thought, oh, shit.
Oh, no.
So he sent it to me, and I was laughing within five pages. So I told him, and then I was a huge fan of Grice, but I didn't know John. He was my favorite part of Napoleon Dynamite, and I mean, I knew him from all these other things. I always thought, that's the guy that should break open.
Yeah.
So when I found out he was doing it, they said, oh, would you play this role? I volunteered not knowing where Hanford was. I thought it was like in San Bernardino, like I could drive home. So then they sent me the map. It's 200 miles away, and I'm like, are you shitting me?
We've done shows there.
Yeah.
At Hanford?
It's quite a drive.
Yeah. Did you go to the ice cream parlor there on the corner?
Oh, the curb? The bar was like an old abandoned jail. That's where we...
Oh, yeah. They kept it open for us every night. Seriously.
The creepiest place. We like, do the show. I'm like, you know this place is haunted. I know. We're leaving.
I know.
Yeah.
Yep. Back in the jail cells at about 2 in the morning if you had a quart of vodka.
Yeah. That's some good performing.
So what... now you're in Pickin' and Grinnin', and what else? What other projects you got coming up?
Well, you were in an episode of Justified, too, right?
Yeah, recently.
Who were you in Justified? Wait, you were the con in Justified, right?
Yeah, I was the guy that took the kidnap.
Oh, that's a great episode.
Suicide by cop.
I love that show. I really like... Somebody just went, Gunslinger, Modern Times, Soul. Like, yeah. That show, to me... And it's the thing, like, we've talked about it on this podcast in the past, like... Some of these big studios, I'm not going to sit here and say all big studio movies are bad, but the ones that fail, and like our last guest, Mark, was talking about 15 writers on the A-team, if they would just look to FX, AMC...
It's a singular vision of a great
HBO,
writer.
Yeah. You're
you know
seeing
what's weird? We always say, let filmmakers make films.
But, and TV is doing that.
Yeah.
Right?
It's really the writer's milieu because you have much more control in television.
Yeah.
It's like David Milch. That was why HBO... was the first in that game because they found really great writers like Alan Ball and David Chase and David Milch. What's your idea? If we like the idea, go make your show. And they did not meddle. That's why you have such unique programs.
I know, because you can just...
And, well, you mentioned Jonah Hex earlier because I loved that comic as a kid.
It's a great comic.
It's a great comic. And, you know, that movie, God...
It was a disaster. Well,
and again, like I agree with what Mark said. Like I really like James Brolin, and when I saw the trailer,
he was
good
at it.
Yes, he did. He brought what he could to the table. But then it's like you add 1,000 people's punching up the script, and you're going to kill it right there.
Well, I thought when that was happening, because I know the Lone Ranger's been in development for ages, and I've always thought a graphic novel, like they did 300, because I grew up on those Western comics.
Sure.
So I was looking forward to that movie, thinking, if it does well, then we're going to see, you know. And no. Now my hope is in Favreau and Cowboys and Aliens. So.
What do you have coming up?
Well, I produced a movie called Bloodworth that I did the adaptation. It's Val Kilmer.
Nice.
Did you make him work out?
He lives near here, and I'm not going to say nothing bad about it.
I love Val Kilmer. We just bust balls. That's what we do.
It's him and Dwight Yoakam.
He never should have been Batman.
That's not his fault. No one would turn that down, though. You know what I mean?
I actually kind of liked his a little bit. But we sold it to Sony, so it's going to be out.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. It's we don't have theatrical at this point, but they're covering everything else.
When will we see it on DVD now?
We don't have a date yet. We got to clear all of our music stuff. We have to do our final sound mix. So once we have those locked in, we'll hear from marketing.
And where can people get a hold of you on the internet if fans want to email you or anything like that? Or should they just go to the Starbucks in Toluca Lake?
That means they would, probably be the best part.
Bring a bloodhound?
Yeah.
Bloodhound and a script.
Yeah. If it's something about Mary 2, I know you never revisit. That's just been my luck. Every time I've been in like a hit or something really big, even like Scream, I got fucking killed in the first
one. Yeah, you got killed in...
Mary happens, and like the Fairleys won't do a sequel.
Well, keep getting killed in good pieces
keep
of work.
Keep killing people in HBO.
Yes,
show,
keep murdering people and saying cocksucker. Yes. We really need more of that.
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much. Earl Brown, everybody. Right. Thank you so much, man. Folks, we have a long line of wonderful filmmakers coming on in.
Come on,
we got
down.
Two more. He's got a beer in his hand. He's ready to go. That's what I like an independent filmmaker. Drunk. And poor. Is it Lena?
Lena.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have from the writer, producer, and actor from the movie Kink Incorporated.
Yeah, Kink.
Kink Inc. Yeah. Dean and Lena. Give them a big round of applause, everybody. Clap it up. Come on now. All right, so thank you so much, you guys. Tell our audience what your movie is, what you guys did in it. Give us the whole bang bang.
Kink, it's a
talk right into the microphone.
You're right about that mic.
Kink, it's a short film. It's about a young couple who are down their luck, desperate for cash, and end up entering a help wanted ad and pursuing this path of home domination, wherein they agree to turn their home into an S&M dungeon, and not really knowing exactly what it is they're getting involved in.
Just for me and my wife and kind of a finance, how would you go about doing that, converting a dungeon?
Would you go with a contractor, or is it a do-it-yourself?
Is it a do-it-yourself?
Oh, it's all do-it-yourself.
In the film, it's do-it-yourself. Yeah.
We're not talking about the film.
They were down on their luck, like we said.
Yes,
so.
You'd be surprised how useful a spatula can be and clothespins can be. And a little bit of rope.
I'm excited.
Now, this sounds like a premise. Would you consider making this into a feature if you had the funding, or is it this is a pretty much self-contained? Yeah.
How did you come up with the idea? You needed funding for your movie, and you guys converted your basement into an S&M dungeon?
And then we should film this.
Yes, honestly.
Wait a minute.
Actually, it does trace back to an article I read years ago about an executive for the, I think, American Cancer Society, who was arrested for embezzling $250,000 to pay at Dominatrix.
I see the connection.
Yes. So suddenly when people are down their luck.
And it just snowballed from there. We're like, how can we make this into a film, and how can we utilize ourselves in our own apartment?
Yeah.
So where did you guys shoot it? Here?
It's actually in Brooklyn. We just moved here about 5 weeks ago from
Brooklyn, Massachusetts.
Brooklyn, New York.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
So we had a basement there. It was a garden apartment, and so we thought, okay, this is the perfect place to do it.
And how much do whips and ball gags really cost? You know what I mean?
And especially on Amazon, it's even cheaper.
Yeah. So used stuff, you want to be careful.
Yeah.
So when is it screening here at the festival?
Is it screening in your basement?
Yeah.
It's on a loop.
It's in your basement. Okay.
It's actually screening today at 5. Tomorrow at 12:30.
You know that's in 18 minutes.
We'll start talking quickly.
And then Sunday at 2 p.m.
Okay.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Yes.
And how about if people aren't at the festival, do you have any plans online or how to offer it to people to watch in their own basements?
Well, you can certainly go to the website, which is kinkinc.com. That's K-I-N-K-I-N-C.
There's got to be a lot of people coming to that website under other pretenses, I would imagine.
As long as
they're interested. If you guys make DVDs and sell them, you're going to sell a lot.
We got them.
We have them.
Nice.
It's on the website.
They're for sale.
Yes.
Worldwide.
All right. All major credit cards accepted at kinkinc.com, it sounds like.
That's correct.
Exactly.
All right. Any other projects coming up, you guys? Turning your guest room into a
into
jello wrestling.
Our project right now is really finding a home. Like I said, we've been here 5 weeks, so we're still home searching.
Do you guys look a little more closely at the basement when you home search?
We need a little raw brick.
All the rooms.
Yes, dramatic lighting.
Like, what can we shoot in this house?
Can you have to change the walls?
It's important. I'm sure the Adobe, which is a lot here, would really help you with the Adobe. Adobe's good for S&M shooting. I don't know if people know that at the bar. People are already drunk here. They're drooling. No one's looking at us. All right. Well, go to your website one more time.
The website is kinkinc.com.
All right. Well, thank you, Dean and Annalena, so much.
Thank you
so much, you guys. Well, that one got me horny. Our next and last guest is a gentleman with a short film called Sasquatch and the Girl, which I'm already on board because I'm currently wearing
a Chewbacca
Rastafarian t-shirt, which is my favorite, next only to my Red Dawn shirt that I just got.
Wolverines.
Trevor, ladies and gentlemen, what's your last name?
Jones.
Trevor Jones, everybody. Big round of applause for Trevor Jones. Come on. We're already drunk here at the Hard Rock. Somebody went down there gambling.
First question, did you shoot it in your basement?
No, I'm actually, I just want to say, I apologize in advance, I'm an animator, so I usually am stuck in a cube all day and I'm not used to socially interacting with people.
Well, we're in a garage.
We do our show in a garage, and we're grown men with lightsabers.
I'm used to people not seeing me, so this is a good medium to.
You know, if you really want to get extroverted, I know a married couple with a great basement, and you can really get in touch with some things you've been keeping hidden.
Yeah, I
think you'd learn a lot about yourself.
Yeah, I think so.
And a cat of nine tails.
Right.
So tell us about your film.
It's a story about, it's told like a Native American type of legend. It's a story about the Sasquatch and why he has to hide from humanity and that sort of thing.
It's animated.
Yes, it's animated. It's, animated in Flash, and it's like cut out mixed with hand-drawn animation. It's,
would you call that mixed media?
Yeah, probably. That probably would be a good description.
So what, was this your first project that you've ever done, or have you done other stuff?
This is I'm going to school for animation right now, and this is the film I did in my second year at CalArts. And so it's the first project that I've actually tried sending out to festivals and that sort of thing.
Okay, and how's that been going? How many festivals have you gotten into?
This is the first one I got into a festival in Russia that I don't remember the name of right now.
called Russian Bride.
I got into the South Dakota Film Festival. And I just found out yesterday that I got into the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival.
Oh, right on. Right on. So what other projects you got going on?
Right now...
Other than getting out and meeting people.
That's the project at hand right this moment.
Girlfriend, married, where are we at? Single, maybe, or...?
No, I have a girlfriend.
Oh, nice. Yeah, right on.
Does she also work in a cubicle?
Yes, she does.
Oh, well, that's so magic.
Is that how you meant?
It works. It works out.
That's how you meant. Is she the girl that does the voice of the girl in Sasquatch and the Girl?
No. The entire story is told through narration. It's actually the narrator is Russell Means, who's the he's known for doing like Last of the Mohicans, and he did the voice of Pocahontas' dad in the Disney film Pocahontas.
How did you get him?
The acting for animators teacher at my school, he did the reference acting for John Smith.
Okay.
Okay. And so he offered us one day to help us out finding actors to help us with our film if we needed actors for a film that we needed that weren't students. And so I was like, okay, I need a Native American actor that's over the age of 60. Do you know anyone like that? And then he's like, okay, let me think. I got some ideas, whatever. So he goes away. He comes back the next day and he's like, you won't believe who I got. And I'm like, who? And he's like, Russell Means. And then being under the age of 20, I had to ask who? And then he explained it to me and I was like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. And then on the trip to go record that, the whole time I was thinking about, how the heck am I gonna direct Russell Means? I don't know how the heck that's gonna work. But he was a really awesome guy. He was really chill about the whole thing, and he was great to work
You didn't correct him, tell him how to say sabotage? That's a William Shatner reference. He was recording, and he kept saying sabotage. It's on the internet. If you look it up, it's William Shatner, and he's going, you know, if we go there, we're going to get sabotage.
Oh, yeah.
And then you hear a voice come in and go, yeah. That's great, Bill. Just one more time. It's just say sabotage. And he goes, sabotage.
I haven't seen
you. You say sabotage, I say sabotage. If I want to say sabotage, I'll say sabotage. You sick of me.
Mixes of that on YouTube.
Oh, yeah, they're great. Yeah. It's amazing.
That's great.
Bill Shatner flipping out. So you should have done that with Russell Means.
just take make the him say outtakes
sabotage.
And
that. Yeah, sabotage. Russell, say sabotage. Say it. Say it like your Pocahontas' dad.
Yeah.
Say sabotage like your Pocahontas' dad. Well, that's awesome. So what else you got going on?
Nothing much.
Bigger cubicle?
kind of. Moving up, so yeah.
Sweet.
Moving up in the years. But I'm right now just trying to come up with my next film that I'm working on, so.
Got any ideas?
Got a lot of ideas, nothing that's sticking. So
I think turn the cubicle into a strip club. That's your next.
That's the
cubicle
next
cubicle office, turn it into a strip club.
You know, I bet someone's done that in the history of the school. So.
Well, do it again.
Not an animation.
And this time have somebody do a William Shatner saying sabotage, do another animated.
Okay.
Where can people see your work or get a hold of you?
They can. The film is not online yet, so it's still doing the festivals right now. So it's gonna go online soon after I'm done.
Do you have a website? Personally?
It's the film website is right now the sasquatchandthegirl.blogspot.com. That's what it is right now.
Okay.
And yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank Trevor from Sasquatch and the Girl, everybody. Big round of applause.
Thanks, brother.
All right, man. Well, that's all the interviews we've done. Thank you so much to everybody here at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino and everyone at the Albuquerque Film Festival, especially my good friend Rich Heinrich, who invited us to come out and do this. I did the festival a year ago. That's it, right? That's okay. So thank you guys so much. And remember, my name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. Thanks for listening.
And remember,
Han shot first.
Yay, we did it. Clap it up. We're all winners.